This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The Georgia legislature convened today. Democrats in the minority again are trying to push some legislation while trying to keep an eye on other bits of legislation. The person in charge of doing that in the House is House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams, a Democrat from Atlanta. She joins us in her office. Thanks for having us and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well.
The governor told me a day or two ago that there will be a substantial increase in the budget for education. How much would be enough, do you think, to make a significant difference? What kind of dollars would you like to see?
I don't have a specific dollar amount because it depends on the county that you're looking at. It depends on the needs that you're trying to address. But I think it's critical for us to move as aggressively as possible towards filling the holes that we created with austerity cuts. Those cuts have crippled school systems across the state, and the reality is it's more expensive to fill those gaps than it is to simply move forward looking at future funding.
Certainly where the money is spent matters, but also you do have to look at the total amount of dollars. Is there a threshold at all for Democrats looking at a budget that takes up a substantial amount of the state budget?
Again, the specific number is less relevant to me than the issue of the $7.6 billion in austerity cuts over the last decade and a half. Beginning to chip away at that, beginning to fill those holes is critical, but we also can't ignore the future obligations that we have. And the challenge with this year's budget and every budget we have going forward is going to be that we have to make up for what we didn't do for the last decade and a half, and we have to plan for what we must do to move kids forward, because children don't get to repeat the past mistakes that we made.
The current funding formula, Quality Basic Education, or QBE, pretty much everybody agrees doesn't work anymore, but it has never been fully funded either. The governor said, we're going to try to work with the formula we have rather than try to tinker with it this year. Is that satisfactory to you?
I agree that we shouldn't change the formula this year, because what you may end up creating is a worse problem than we have right now. My focus is on making certain that we fully fund QBE this year, that we begin to chip away at the deficits we've created in years past, and that we start thinking very strategically about how we make up for it in the future. Because the reality is, no matter what formula we create, our basic obligation remains the same, and that is that we have to fully fund the public education of our school children, and that we can't afford not to put that money in. And unfortunately, what we've done for the last decade or so is to undercut not only that commitment that we have as a state, but we've fundamentally altered how children can learn in this state by removing textbooks from the classroom, forcing lights to go out. And I think that any number that we look at has to be fully reflective of the need of those children. I don't think we have that formula in place now, but I'm unwilling to jeopardize the kids that we have to fund in this coming fiscal year on the off chance that we come up with the right formula in the next 40 days.
Are there any specifics that you want to see increased in education? For instance, teacher pay raises. The governor has also hinted at increased spending for internet learning and connectivity.
I think those are all valuable and necessary expenditures. I think we also have to pay attention to the fundamentals. The cuts that we've made through the austerity budget have led to furlough days. We need children in class. Being out of school, having less than 180 days, we know is bad for their learning. So I think we need to put more money there. And although this is not technically in the education budget, it's in the HOPE budget. But we also have to think about early childhood learning. We have to begin investing in that in a more aggressive way and expanding access. And so those are going to be the priorities I look to.
When you say early childhood learning, are you talking specifically about pre-K, or are you talking about other things as well?
I think we have to start with pre-K, but I think DECAL has actually done a very good job of expanding the conversation around early childhood learning.
DECAL is what?
DECAL is the Department of Early Care and Learning for the state of Georgia. So it's the division that has oversight for early childhood education and pre-K. They have been led by Bobby Cagle, and I think have done a great job of expanding conversations about early pre-K, early childhood learning and pre-K, looking at daycare standards, looking at how we embed in every day of a child's learning and their time good learning practices and good learning standards. And so I think it's important for us to keep that in mind as we think through this year's budget.
We spoke a year ago at the beginning of what is a two-year session, so you're halfway through. You outlined some of the priorities that the Democrats had. Among them was increasing the availability of the HOPE grant for technical college students by lowering the grade standard back to what it had been at the beginning. That was done. Now the conversation, according to Representative Stacey Evans, who sponsored all of this legislation, is on fully funding the HOPE grant, funding an entire tuition for a student who qualifies. Is that something realistically that you think will happen this year, and is that one of your priorities?
So beginning in 2011, when we worked with Governor Deal on revising the HOPE scholarship, I made a strong priority of looking at the HOPE grant for technical colleges, and I asked Representative Stacey Evans to take the lead because of her strong advocacy on that issue. Last year, we were excited to have our core principle last year passed, and that was changing the GPA. And this year, we're looking at funding. It's not sufficient to simply get the kids back into the school or get students back into the schools. And these, we're talking about children. We're talking about high school students who are doing dual enrollment. But we're also talking about college-ready students as well as adults who are returning to school. We want to make certain that finances are not the reason they don't succeed. And so we're asking for full funding of tuition. We are willing to have conversations with the governor's office about something that may be a little less than full funding, but certainly keeps us moving on the path forward. And I've been very proud of Stacey's efforts and the diligent work that she's done, and I think we're going to make progress this year.
Do you have a cost estimate, though, for what full tuition funding would be? Because once you fully fund it, you're going to have more students.
I think the most recent information that Representative Evans provided was that it was roughly $30 million based on current use. And the argument is that some of those dollars currently sit in reserves for the HOPE scholarship or the HOPE grant because those students who left because of the change in the GPA were still accounted for in the budget. And so I think our argument is going to be we have to begin to spend down those monies on the purposes for which they were reserved, and that is to put these students back into school and to give them that tuition funding. I think that $30 million out of the HOPE reserves is not too much to ask, but again, we want to be successful, and we want something that can pass the legislature and get the governor's signature, and so we're working with the governor's office to determine what that looks like.
Have you gotten the same signals from them, and have you gotten any indication that there could be some sort of compromise on this?
We work very closely with the governor's office on this issue because, in the end, this isn't simply about an idea. It's about making certain that we get workforce access for these students, that these students who go back to technical colleges can and will be able to begin and finish their education. And so certainly we start on the premise of full funding. The governor's office has indicated that that's not their starting point. Compromise and negotiation is about finding a place where we can both feel that we've done what we need to do for the constituents we serve and that we speak for. And so I look forward to having Stacey Evans continue to lead those conversations. I've been involved in some of them, and we will do our best to come to a resolution that benefits the students of Georgia.
But do you think we'll come out at the end of this session with more of these students in the technical colleges having more of their tuition funded?
Absolutely. I believe that more tuition funding is going to be available. I think it's going to be a smart and aggressive play that continues to put Georgia first in how we treat technical college students. And I think it continues to lift up workforce development as a priority for the Democrats and for the state.
One of the things you said would be a Democratic priority at the beginning of this two-year session last year was a critical look at our gun laws, particularly expanded checks for mental health patients and that sort of thing. The momentum for that, both nationally and locally, following Sandy Hook, appears to have waned, at least if you look at public opinion polls. Do you have any hope that you'll be able to pass any kind of gun legislation this year?
The goal isn't necessarily to pass legislation this year. When you're in the minority, passing legislation is a nice thought, and we've been very successful, but the goal really is to lift up the conversation. And we will continue to do that because families deserve the protection, our communities deserve that protection, and our state deserves that conversation. And so we'll continue to talk about it. But the goal isn't necessarily to have a piece of legislation signed in an election year in a state that is very heavily favored by the NRA.
But will you push it?
We will certainly push the legislative prerogatives that we introduced last year. And among that, those prerogatives is the legislation around mental health and around gun laws.
One of the issues that has gotten a great deal of attention is the foster care system, the child welfare system, the Division of Family and Children's Services. After some children died, in DFACS care, there was a great deal of attention paid to caseload and to the system as a whole. There has been talk, at least, of privatizing the foster care system in Georgia or DFACS even. Do you have any initial opposition to that in principle, or do you want to see the details first?
I think that we have to do what is best for the children of the state. Privatization, I think, sometimes sounds like an easy answer to a complicated problem. And as with every legislative prerogative and initiative offered in the state, I want to see the details. I want to understand how it's worked. My understanding is that in some states, privatization has had success. In other states, it's been a dismal failure. Georgia has to solve its challenge. We have to protect these children. And I'm willing to listen to any idea, but I will certainly reserve judgment about whether privatization is the route that Georgia should take.
The problems with DFACS have continued despite promises from governors of both parties, several administrations in a row now. Is there any reason why one should trust the state to take care of these kids?
The state is responsible for these children. Now, who actually delivers the services is the conversation, but there is no space where the state can abdicate its responsibility. And that's why, whether we're talking about privatization, whether we're talking about increased funding, whether we're talking about new training, whatever the answer is, it's the state's obligation to find that solution and to finance that solution. What I think we have to be focused on is making certain that the children we are entrusted to protect, the most vulnerable, and indeed those children who've had the worst start in their lives, that we understand that our obligation doesn't cease, whether we keep it in-house or expand it into outsourced services.
But keeping it in-house would imply that the system we have now can be fixed. Is DFACS, just as it stands now, broken beyond the point of repair?
Governmental services are never broken beyond the point of repair. The issue is, what are you trying to do and how are you trying to do it? When we want something to be done well, we figure out a way to make it work. But often that means we have to spend more money than we'd like. And that's usually the challenge. The challenge is one of economics, not one of morality. And I think in this case, we have finally, I think, reached a tipping point where our economics have to meet our moral obligations. And I think that the solution will lie in the best information, best practices, and proof in the pudding. And so what I will do is look to the legislation, read the proposals, and also look at states that have tried this and whether they've succeeded or failed. But I think it's too early to cast judgment until we know what we're trying to do.
Anything new you have coming up this session as part of your priority list?
The two major legislative priorities that the House caucus will focus on, in addition to those pieces that carry over from last year, we'll be looking at the taxpayer empowerment agenda. As we have conversations about outsourcing and privatization, we want to really focus on making certain that we put in place those rubrics that make it make sense for Georgia and protect their dollars. The other piece that we're going to focus on heavily, even though it may not pass this year, is really making our voting rights make sense in Georgia. The two pieces are online voter registration, which in Maricopa County, Arizona, which is not a conservative, not a liberal bastion at all, saved them 80 cents per ballot, took it from 80 cents to 83 cents to 3 cents per ballot, but also looking at permanent portable registration. You should be able to move around the state of Georgia and not have to register every single time you move, and that's going to be two issues that we push really hard this year on voter rights.
Will that registration, though, do anything to change the state's voter identification laws?
The goal is not to change those laws. The goal is to make certain that those laws do not impede the ability of Georgians to vote. And that's our responsibility. It's to protect voter rights and to enlarge as much as possible the access that we have to the ballot box.
One of my colleagues, Jim Burris, has done a special with Creative Loafing on needle exchanges for addicts. And the idea is that programs that are aimed at disease prevention are also illegal in the state of Georgia. Is it time to revisit Georgia's laws on needle exchanges, at least within certain parameters?
I think it is. I think Georgia has reached a point where we understand that medical necessity should bow or should reign when we're talking about saving lives. The social imprimatur that stopped us from doing needle exchanges 20 years ago, I don't think those have fallen away, but I think that it's necessary for us to think about the lives we need to save. Georgia has an aggressive population, aggressive progress of AIDS in our population, as well as other diseases that are transmitted through needle usage. And if we want to save those lives, we have to think about doing the right thing.
Do you have any legislation in mind, or does anyone in the caucus have legislation in mind that would somehow allow a needle exchange without going beyond what, say, the legal community might worry about?
That is not legislation that any of our members have introduced, but we're certainly open to thinking about it and having conversations about introducing legislation in the future.
Political question. This is an election year. You have a member of your party already in the state Senate who has announced he is going to challenge Governor Deal. Will that make it harder for you to work with the governor's office on legislation this winter and spring?
No.
Nothing more than that?
The responsibility that we have as legislators is to serve the citizens of the state. And I think both Governor Deal and Senator Carter understand that my job as minority leader is to do the best I can to serve those constituents and to lead my caucus. And I don't think that their decisions about their future political endeavors will interfere with my ability to serve that responsibility.
As a Democrat, were you disappointed that Mayor Kasim Reed has not yet enthusiastically endorsed Senator Carter? He said nice things about him, but he's also said he has to sort of prove things to him.
I've served with Senator Carter for the last 3-4 years now, and I've been very impressed with his service. I'm proud to be one of his first endorsers. I'm proud to be a contributor to his campaign. And now, because it's the first day of session, my attention is going to turn to getting all of us in a position so that Democrats are situated to do well in these upcoming elections, but more importantly, that we are situated to do well as citizens of the state, and that's going to be my focus.
So you're not worried about what the mayor does?
I am the House Minority Leader, and my job is to lead the Democratic caucus, and that's what I'm going to focus on.
House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams is a Democrat from Atlanta. Thanks so much for being with us.
Dennis, it is always a pleasure. Thank you.